Welcome to the Empathetic Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Hammond. Today I have Connor Ronson from Linear B. Connor, it's really nice to have you on.
Great to be here, Brad. I appreciate you having me on the pod. I always love chatting with experts like yourself and should be a good conversation.
Absolutely. I'm really excited. So first, tell me a bit about yourself and what you got going on and a bit about your company.
Sure. Happy to. So I am the director of demand generation at Linear B. We are a software analytics and developer experience tool company. So software as a service product. We help engineering teams improve their ability to streamline code delivery, improve their workflows, and help provide a more positive experience for the developers. We're really designed to help everyone from a leadership level down to the individual developer, improve the way they work and improve their visibility, understanding of the metrics that matter to their teams and align to business priorities. As for myself, I have a background in marketing, obviously, but also technology more broadly. I've done consulting in cybersecurity, Web3 space, and in particular, I've focused in on developers and working with engineers and engineering leaders for the last several years, including working on the consultative practice at Microsoft for several years, focusing on cybersecurity on the Web3 side of things, and now the last couple of years with Linear B. I also am the co-host of the Dev Interrupted podcast. So we host a podcast with about 4,000-ish engineering leaders listening every week, talking to the best in the business in engineering. And I will say it's part of our demand strategy.
Awesome. I love that. We're going to get a bit into that. So first and foremost, maybe just give me a high-level overview of your demand strategy. What are you guys, what's your approach to engaging these engineering folks and all that stuff?
I'll say first off, just to give a bit of context, Linear B, we're about 85, 90 employees right now as we're recording this in September 2022. Raised a $50 million round in May. So we've seen some great growth. We've already kind of passed that first mark of like, okay, we have several million dollars in recurring revenue every year. How do we scale that next step is kind of our challenge we're facing. And I've been at Linear B now, God, must be 19 months, 18 months, something along those lines. And I came on board to accelerate our awareness strategy and have broadened my role to lead our demand gen strategies in general. And when I talk about awareness, I'm talking about partially about that podcast I mentioned. So we really believe in this idea that there needs to be an opportunity for buyers in this digital age, particularly buyers who are technical, to consume content about your company and about your viewpoints prior to actually entering your clear funnel. And so I'm a big fan of ungated content that speaks to the pain points that are being experienced by your target market, by your industry. In our case, it's engineering leaders, developers. And more particularly, I'm also a really big fan of challenger content. So there's the challenger sales methodology. I have been for several years working to apply that from a content framework perspective to not just empathize with the feelings of engineering leaders, but also challenge them to think about what's the next step I need to do to make my engineering team, my company really great. And that's a really crucial part of our strategy and something you should consider as I talk about everything else I'm saying in this, which is we're not just providing, hey, here's what our product does. We're also really challenging leaders to think about what does their team need? What are the risks they need to avoid? How can they improve? And we're trying to work with the best companies in the world by doing that.
And just for everyone out there listening, what's the premise of challenger sales? Could you give just a little bit of background on that?
Sure. So challenger sales methodology, which I've kind of like brought into this content viewpoint, as I mentioned, the idea is that the best salespeople will succeed by actually challenging the person they're talking to. So if I was trying to sell you, Brad, on Linear B, I wouldn't just say, oh, like this will help you solve this pain point. I'll say, how are you experiencing the current economic recession? I'd talk to you about, I'd ask them like some challenging questions around what you're feeling. That does help build empathy and connection. But then I'm also going to challenge you and say, like, I think that you have this problem and go beyond a simple, hey, here's a solution for something we know you have, but also challenge you to think about problems you maybe haven't. So maybe you aren't thinking about the PR process, pull request process in engineering. We have a very clear viewpoint around pull requests that we want to put out in the industry. And we believe it's a major blocker for workflows for any engineering team. And we think we have ways to improve that. And so we're going to challenge engineers and engineering leaders to think about that blocker and consider it from our viewpoint.
So yeah, let's dive into a bit of content. And you mentioned your podcast that you guys are creating. Walk me through that. What does that look like? What's that experience been for you guys? And tell me a bit about it.
Yeah. So for context, I have a background in public speaking and in content more broadly. So I've been a writer for both marketing and personal purposes for years. I also worked in politics for several years coming out of college and did quite a bit of public speaking. And that's really kind of drawn me to the world of podcasting the last several years. So you'll hear this a lot from, you know, demand marketers now these days for B2B companies. Hey, like you have to have a podcast to help kind of drive your thought leadership home. And we've been doing that for, God, 2 seasons now. Podcast is 2 years old. Got just about 100 episodes at this point, maybe just above that soon. And that has been a big way that we have tried to not only create our category as something that's kind of emerging within developer tools, but also to establish our viewpoint on how to apply engineering methodology, things like avoiding measuring engineers off of dumb decisions like lines of code, and also trying to really drive home that engineering teams should be focused on team metrics instead of individual metrics. We're very much a team-first approach. We're trying to improve developer experience not only as individuals but also as a team, and we are very much against leadership measuring individuals in a way that goes into, say, stack ranking. That's something like we are definitively against. And we interview leaders from companies like Microsoft, Slack, Stack Overflow, and then also, you know, smaller startups who are just getting started, who have an interesting viewpoint. Maybe they've done something exciting. Maybe the James Stanier at Shopify wrote a book. Like, you know, we kind of like pick and choose these guests and work with them to not only convey our viewpoint sometimes, but much more often to find out what the most interesting minds in engineering are doing. And by doing that, we have built this awareness motion that's really crucial to our sales and marketing methodology. That motion has included hundreds of leaders. It has expanded into a conference series. We're now in our third iteration. The third one's coming up October 25th. And we had over 2,000 engineering leaders attend the last one. We're expecting the same at this next upcoming virtual conference. It's expanded into a 2,500-person Discord community. We write articles based off it. We repurpose the content as clips on social media. And it's really helped us establish ourselves as the leaders in where the future of engineering is going for our category.
I love that. So when I think of podcasts, I think of two big things, production and promotion. What does this process look like for you guys? Obviously, over 100 episodes, that's an amazing accomplishment. And what does it look like from both the producing it standpoint and then actually get growing listenership, growing your audience, all that stuff?
Yeah, so I want to bring this back a bit to the framework we use and how we're building out our seasons. So we do 1 season a year currently, and we have iterated as we've gone along. So the podcast actually started a couple months before I came on board at Linear B. I was recruited to take over the podcast, lead it to the next level because I'd done some podcasting before. And one of those key things we're trying to do from the very strategic standpoint from the start is to challenge customer assumptions about what the industry is and develop a constructive tension where they think about new ideas. Because as I mentioned, that leads into our sales methodology and how we want to market and sell and how we think the future of engineering can be. Because we want to position ourselves to the people who are not just providing a product, but also are pushing the boundaries of the industry, helping everyone improve. Continuous improvement's a big thing in not just other industries, but also engineering. It's a big term for us, and we are really pro that. We want to provide that thought leadership. And so that's kind of our baseline expectation. And the way we've done that from a production standpoint is to evolve on not only guests, but also the approach we're taking. So originally, our COO, Dan Lines, who's a former VP of engineering, was the primary host. He still is the primary host. I have now joined him as a co-host. We interview leaders from all over the world, but we have targeted arcs we'll go take the show through. So we'll have, let's say, we're focusing on Latin America, and we may have interviewed several companies from Latin America. Or we may say, okay, I brought up pull requests earlier. A big theme for us right now in a lot of the research we've been doing on our product side is identifying pull requests as a huge sticking point in the engineering process. So we'll kind of flow through on that arc for several episodes. And to kind of dig into the specifics of how that works on a production process, we have several stages. So before a guest even comes on, we'll do a call with them for 30 minutes to discuss what they want to talk about, get to know them, make sure they're a good fit. There have been a couple times where we've had to say, actually, we think this would be a better fit for a video exclusive for our YouTube because it wasn't a fit for like a full hour long podcast, which some of our podcasts are. So we'll do that pre-meeting. We'll usually have a couple of producers in that meeting. So sometimes it's myself plus a couple of our producers. Sometimes it's just a couple of our producers. From there, we'll build a talk track. And, you know, similar to what Brad and I are doing here, Brad provided me a list of questions in advance. We had a pre-meeting, but we're already going off script a bit, right? Like, it's not an exact script. The best interviewers like Brad will give folks an opportunity to really talk about what they're passionate about and kind of help guide the conversation. We not only prep our hosts to actually take that approach, but we also explicitly communicate with the guests in advance saying, hey, you know, here are 15 questions we think we want to ask. And we design those in different sections. So for us, we not only do sections based off of topic, but we do it based off of type of topic. We usually try to have a more technical topic, a more leadership-driven topic, and we'll have other like rotating topics depending on the guest and their background. We also design this very intentionally in advance for a distribution standpoint. So you mentioned the production process. I'm not going to get into editing quite yet. I know I'm going on a long time, but I have a lot of passion around this. But we design from the very start in that pre-interview process, in that communication process, we design for distribution down the line, which means, okay, what do we think are going to make great clips from this episode that we can distribute on YouTube, that we can distribute on TikTok, that we can distribute on LinkedIn and Twitter? What do we think could create great quotes? Where do we think is something that could be a great Reddit headline? We've seen a ton of success distributing our content on Reddit and programming subreddits. Where are things that we think could potentially be turned into an ad spot? Or is there something that maybe could be a fit for a teaser for our conference coming up October 25th, Interact? So we think about that intentionally and kind of like have some guidelines for that before we even do the recording. And we very intentionally pick our guests. So we do take some inbound guest requests. And if you're a marketer listening here and you work for an incredible company that has an incredible engineering team, hit me up on Twitter. We'd love to talk to you. We're always looking for more leaders to come on the pod. But as we kind of go through that initial pre-process, we're thinking about the actual distribution later. So great, we've done the pre-interview, we've drafted that script, we've shared it with the guests, we've gotten maybe feedback from them sometimes. Sometimes you'll work with a guest communication department to approve some questions. That's more of a rarity though. And then we'll do like a full hour recording with them. At that point, we run it through some processing and try to improve the audio quality. There've been a couple times we've actually gone back to a guest and said, hey, we need to re-record this segment. We didn't get good audio. But we have a pre-production checklist that we've developed to help avoid that whenever possible. But early in our time, that definitely happened to us more so. And from there, we go into our post-recording session and have our editing process where we use Descript to go in. We have a main editor who generally will take the episode and work through it. And other people will sometimes go in and leave comments in a very like, it's almost like a Google Doc where you can just say, hey, you know, this auto transcribe section, I'm going to highlight it. I'm going to comment on it. I think it should be a clip. I don't think it should be. And we'll create clips through that process. We'll highlight potential quotes and we'll edit out sections. The idea is to give like a white glove experience to every guest, encourage them to promote it on the back end, but also provide us a ton of promotional material. Right now, typically an interview takes 4 to 6 weeks to come out for us because we're pretty far booked in advance. We also, I will say, are starting to move into some live recordings, which I can talk about as well if that's of interest. That post-production process, you know, we communicate with the guests, we share the social clips with them, we share the date of publishing. Right now we're publishing on Tuesdays. We've previously done Saturdays for a while. We've tried a couple of different dates to kind of figure out what's best for us. And when an episode comes out, we publish that episode on our devinterrupted.com website. It obviously goes across multiple different channels, you know, whether you want to find it on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, Spotify. That all happens via Buzzsprout automatically for us, but we also publish this like blog, which we then distribute. So the blog has an embedded podcast in it. We distribute it to developer websites, dev.to is an example, D-Zone sometimes. And we'll kind of share with them, hey, here's what's happening. Here's the thought leadership topic we applied. We're trying to differentiate based on this like in-depth approach and this kind of knowledge that we're trying to share. And then we'll break that up for social media. And we'll also sometimes partner with the guests and their companies to do particular segments where we'll do, you know, co-tweets, that kind of thing. That's the basics in very long form. Happy to dive into any sections that interest you.
Absolutely. And as you've run this whole process, I'm sure it's evolved. Have there been any major learnings that like, oh, this has really stood out, or, you know, missteps that you'd avoid, you know, for others listening that might be kind of earlier on in this process?
Yeah, the more you can shift left in the production process so that you can avoid issues, the better. So as an example, I mentioned audio problems. If you can have that pre-production checklist where you make sure every guest is wearing headphones, where you make sure they have the right setup, where you make sure their door is closed, their Slack's turned off, their phone's turned off, It's going to save you a ton of editing time on the line. And all you have to do is run through a checklist with the guest usually. So that's an example of kind of shifting left and doing things before they become a problem that we've had to learn. Another example is that pre-interview. It enables you to make sure the guest is actually a good fit for the podcast, set up some questions, do a little research. I highly recommend that. And then I would also say, I've kind of explicitly mentioned thinking about how you want to distribute the podcast in advance has been huge for us. It's really enabled us to make sure we're aligning everything from questions to titling to the rapport that we're trying to have with the guest to how you want to distribute it later. Because as much as, you know, every demand expert is going to come and tell you, hey, you got to distribute your content in multiple ways. Break that ebook down. It should be quotes and, you know, a video and multiple other things. If you don't plan for that from the start, it can be kind of hard because your content may come out in a way that has to be redesigned. I'll say we're still really learning on this. We haven't cracked TikTok. We haven't put a ton of time into it, frankly, but it's an area that I really want us to invest a bit more in because I think there's such huge growth potential. Some folks have done an incredible job with that. And there's definitely people we want to continue to emulate and build on there.
Absolutely. Let's talk about organic versus paid. You obviously put it up on different platforms. Is most of the promotion organic, or do you put paid spend behind the clips and all that stuff?
So we have experimented with paid for it. We typically find that it hasn't been as effective for us unless it's like a very well-designed clip. So when we first tried this, we were just taking, oh, this clip did pretty well on social. Let's try it with some paid budget. And we didn't find it to be that successful. What I have enjoyed from a paid perspective is I'll say Buzzsprout ads platform for podcasts is pretty darn good to promote your podcast to other podcast feeds. But I think the caveat here is that when you're promoting a podcast, yes, a lot of people listen to podcasts, but there's also a large percentage of folks who don't. Whereas like a blog, for example, almost everyone's going to read a blog at some point or another, even if it's not their preferred method of communication. Podcast is not necessarily true for. And so you have to really pick your spots where you want to promote and ideally promote it to an audience that is aware and interested in podcasts if you want to promote the pod in particular, or else you need that clip from the pod, let's say, to be very well designed for socials, because it's really easy for a lot of podcast clips to be more about, as an example, me droning on to Brad about like my opinion on something versus like compelling content that's really going to catch you on social media. Because as much as someone may be excited about empathetic marketing, they may also see this other YouTube short that talks about how much money Mr. Beast is making. And that just might be more exciting in that moment. And then maybe they'll save the clip, but will they come back to it? So I think there are ways to do paid spend for a podcast very appropriately, and you can help a ton, but you have to be really careful because it's also easy to waste your ad dollars there. One thing we have done really effectively is when we do create incredible thought blogs about our pod, which we often do, is we'll take our best episodes and turn them into a longer form blog where we'll embed the podcast in it. A great way to kind of catch some of that promotion for the pod is to, let's say, promote the blog, which maybe has other CTAs as well. And we're promoting a longer thought leadership piece that features the pod, and folks who are interested will jump on board with it. But I'm personally more of a fan of organic growth for a pod, but it's definitely hard.
Absolutely. Let's talk about targets, metrics, things you're measuring. Like, how do you measure this initiative, its impact, tie it to demand, all that stuff?
Great question. It's something we've definitely struggled with at times and have had to iterate on quite a bit. If you are a SaaS product or other business that is trying to use a podcast for promotion, my number one recommendation is to use a self-attribution model as part of your attribution. So as an example, right now we have a HubSpot form set up that includes when you're like booking a demo with us, it'll ask you how you heard about us. And we get a lot of folks who will say the podcast, Dev Interrupted, you know, some variation of this, the Interact conference we host. I manually go through those and we'll search through them and we sort them based off of that and add some tagging on the back end to help identify this. Another way to do it is identifying folks who come in as word of mouth or direct traffic. Those are folks who have seen your brand in some other way or who do branded search for you. Like, yes, maybe branded search is showing up as organic search for you, but we know they were aware of your brand in some way. Now, that might not be the podcast. That could be an event you were at or something else. But drilling into that, training your sales team to ask those questions, those are great ways to go about it. And that's very much on the like attribution side if you're selling a product. On the other side of things with the podcast and seeing success, first day downloads is a big sign for you of whether your pod is actually building a listenership. So if you can start to track back to different activities that are being taken to promotion, you'll be able to see that spike in downloads. It's also really interesting for me to look into like the country and city data with the pod and say, okay, where are we building a community of listeners? I find that very fascinating. And I'll shout out, there are some cool tools. We're not currently using any, but I've been impressed by folks like Casted that are starting to take podcasts and show how you can identify what companies are listening. I think there's great stuff happening that the worth of the work Brad's doing. There's a lot of interesting tools and approaches to this coming out. I'd be curious, Brad, how are you thinking about it from your end? Because I know my perspective. What am I missing?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've kind of explored all the different aspects of promotion. And one of the hard things about podcasts are it's, you know, a lot of times you don't know who's listening. You see 100 people downloaded it and who exactly is listening all this. So for us, one of the things that we're actively working on and exploring is this concept of outbound promotion and actually going out, sending, you know, the podcasts out to people and engaging them and all that. So we're kind of into that journey now, but we've gotten some really good results and success beyond, you know, posting it on social and looking at downloads and paid growth and all that stuff.
Are you building an email list as well for that? Because I'll say that's something we've had a lot of success with, is building an email list adjacent to the pod.
Yeah, we've done email experiments. I think for us, it's very dependent on who exactly is the group we're sending it out to. So we recently actually launched a podcast in the developer space. Oddly enough, we had a lot of traction on LinkedIn outbound with developers. So we would go in and we'd look at who's been active and, you know, if it's a .NET community or these developer groups on LinkedIn, sort it by who's been active recently on LinkedIn, and then literally just message them and say, hey, we recently launched a podcast, wanted to share it with you. Can I send it your way? And something like 40-50% of those developers message us back, said, absolutely, I'm always looking for new stuff to listen to. And we were able to get hundreds of people that were new developers listening to this show.
That's really interesting. Are you trying it from an automated perspective with paid, or are you doing it from an organic manual perspective?
No paid. It's just organic, manual, one-on-one. So a lot of work, but we are uniquely positioned because on our team, we have a whole guest sourcing team and outbound folks that reach out. So we took a couple of those folks. We said, hey, instead of going finding guests, go share this content out and you know, engage people kind of one-on-one community style. And yeah, it's been a very effective promotion channel for us.
Yeah, I'll say I have a personal podcast that I ran for about 8 episodes before pausing it just due to time constraints. And I found that to be very effective as well. It's also a great way if you're trying to get reviews for your podcast. It's really hard to get them just by asking your listeners to review. And I'll say if you're listening to this, you haven't reviewed this podcast, Empathetic Marketing, great pod. Thank you, Brad, for having me on and like definitely review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you use that. I cannot tell you how much it matters as a podcaster. It really does. People look to that.
Absolutely. It's super important. Well, as we're wrapping up here, any last thoughts or words of wisdom, Connor, before we run, and you know, key takeaways for other listeners out there?
Yeah, I'll say like we've talked a lot about distribution and process, but the number one thing that will make or break your podcast is the quality of your guests, your hosts, and your audio. And if you don't have that net dialed in, if you don't have like a great mic like Brad's using, if you don't have interesting guests coming on, no one's going to listen to your podcast anyways, even if you drive them to it. You need to actually keep them coming back and build a loyal listenership. That's when you see the best results, because people start sending the podcast to their networks. They maybe want to come on the show themselves. They want to go meet you at an event. They're excited in a sales deal because like, oh, Brad, I've heard your voice for months now. Like, I love your podcast. So my number one advice would be, don't forget the most important things by getting caught up in the details. And if you're going to do it, get started, start trying it. You're going to learn really quick as you go along.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, Connor, it was great to have you on. And thanks so much for joining here today.
My pleasure, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Yep.